Welcome to the 40th episode of the Frank Reactions podcast, the show where we help you profit from the digital era through better customer experiences online and off. My name is Tema Frank. Today's guest is Lori Schmidt, who's the CEO of Go Productivity, which is a nonprofit organization that helps small to mid-size manufacturers and other firms become more productive. And as she and I discussed, there's a huge relationship between the things you need to do to improve productivity in your organization and the things you need to do to improve customer experience. Enjoy the interview, and I will chat with you briefly at the end.
So my name is Lori Schmidt. I am the CEO of Go Productivity, and we're a not-for-profit corporation that works with mid-sized organizations to help them be more competitive by looking at productivity, competitiveness, innovation issues. My background is a mix of both private sector and public sector, so worked within the government of Alberta in a number of portfolios, primarily in industry development, and then moved into the private sector, working with not-for-profits and mid-sized, primarily manufacturing firms, assisting them to be more competitive when we see competition coming into our marketplace, but even more importantly, the change in dynamics given with our dollar, with the falling price of oil, and even adjustments to a change in government. Those can all impact firms. So we assist them at the firm level. What are things that they can do that they have within their own control that they can start to look for more efficiencies? How can they continue to be more innovative and add value ultimately to their customer?
So typically, what do you see as being the big barriers to companies being more productive and more effective that way?
The biggest barriers to companies being more productive is just understanding their own internal processes and nurturing and developing that culture of innovation. A lot of our firms, you know, this is a great environment. Alberta has a great environment for the entrepreneurial spirit. So a lot of individuals start with an idea or a widget, and the business grows and sometimes grows in spite of them because there's so many opportunities within Alberta. And you don't really realize where those inefficiencies start to pile up until you hit some of those tough times or you're being squeezed by your customer to cut your costs. So, you know, step one is just helping businesses know what questions should I even be asking myself, you know, about my business, and how do we start to unravel, you know, things don't get there just overnight. So it's kind of taken probably some time of adding this, you know, process or adding this new widget, and you don't realize how kind of convoluted the business has become. So step one is helping them understand how to unravel that and look at their business in a new way and look for those opportunities.
How often do you think a company should do that, kind of stepping back and looking at their processes?
You know, I used to say, you know, kind of yearly, but, you know, we as a business now do that even on a quarterly basis. We're always looking at what can we improve, how, especially when you look at the customer experience, how are we continuing to innovate ourselves so that we're continuing to bring value to our customers? And I think that all businesses should be doing that. And not that you want to break everything, you know, all the time, but you should always be looking at everything you're doing through the lens of how can we improve, how can we streamline, how are we utilizing the valuable resources, especially our people resources, in the most effective way that we can.
Well, it gladdens my heart to hear you say your people resources, since I'm working on a book called People Shock, all about the people side of the equation. Mm-hmm. You talked, when you and I chatted the other day, obviously where I saw the similarity in our work is it is through people that you can deliver great customer experiences, but in order for them to deliver those, you need to get the processes right, which ties in very much to the productivity work that you guys do. Right. One of the things that you commented on a moment ago was a crisis point sometimes happening when customers start really squeezing them to lower costs. I've spoken to marketing managers in manufacturing companies who feel that there's something contradictory between being able to lower their costs versus focusing on customer service and customer experience. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I would totally agree. I think, you know, one of the biggest challenges we have is understanding what the customer really values and what they want. And I don't think that we have enough of those conversations between the company that's providing the product or the services and the client who's receiving them. You know, even an opportunity sometimes to innovate together on what that end product might be.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're a little bit more open to that when the economy is kind of flying, although then we're just kind of working on a time crunch to get things out as quickly as we can. So we're not so good on that end either. I think, you know, it has to be done in two-pronged approach. One is that we need to, as a business, really take a look at our product and in our processes, but at the same time, be focusing on the value of the customer. You know, how do we help the customer, give them the value they want, but continue to look for added value to which they're going to pay for? And that needs to come through, I think, through a collaborative approach. You know, building customer loyalty through developing some trust. You know, I think we all want the same things. You want kind of timeliness in what you're providing. They want a good product and efficient, and they want it, you know, the customer wants it when they want it, of course. But ultimately, it needs to come back also to that service component. And defining the service is going to be a little bit different depending on that, the client-customer relationship. So it's really about developing the relationship and really helping the, you know, getting the customer to help identify what they really value.
Do you think that with a lot of organizations, they start off, I presume, most of them, especially manufacturers, they start off because they perceive a gap in the market. There's something out there that people need and it doesn't exist, so they start doing it. Initially, they'd be very focused on the customers. Does it then happen that they just get so busy they stop talking to enough customers? Is that where that gap starts to creep in?
Yeah, I think that's where it is. I think sometimes they take the relationship for granted. You know, we get so excited when we win the project or win that order that we're all about the reorder or the next order, and poor at circling back to you know, various intervals to say, you know, really almost a survey type approach to say, how did we do? How could we do better? What do you need next? You know, I just think we missed out on that step completely.
Now, when you're talking to business owners, do you find that they're nervous about doing that?
They are. I think it's more around that they're just often wired and kind of engage their people who are doing the selling and sales and marketing for them just to be going after the next order.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we're always good about inviting feedback and useful feedback. I mean, you see it from a lot of service organizations right now. As I went to Mr. Lube yesterday, within moments, I had a survey form to fill in about my experience there. But I don't think it has translated well into the industrial sectors.
Okay.
And I think, you know, I think there's a huge opportunity, but I don't know that they're really aware of how to do that. And it's got to be, I think I referenced earlier, I think this is more relational than sending out the survey.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I think they need to build trust by being a bit safer and even inviting them into their operation, you know, which is huge risk, right? So come and see what we're doing. Come and see the improvements that we continue to make and work really on those long-term events. I think there's one more element. I don't know if I've mentioned this to you before, but in Alberta particularly, we tend to pedal as fast as we can in an up economic cycle because we know there's going to be a down economic cycle.
Right.
And so we are very short-term thinkers, both in kind of our planning as we're looking at our businesses and where they need to go. But I think that also extends into that customer relationship where we're just on that quick order because we're not sure, you know, how long that's going to be, rather than investing in a longer term relationship.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So we're sort of in this awkward spot then where companies, when boom times are on, they don't want to spend the time re-examining processes and customer experience. And mm-hmm. then when bust times hit, they feel they don't have the money.
Right.
Which is ultimately why I guess your organization ends up as a not-for-profit.
Right.
And yet I would assume that even as a not-for-profit, you've got to be proving to them somehow that there is a financial gain to doing this type of change.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you make that case to them?
So we normally ask if we can do just a kind of a quick, audit or walkthrough with the operation. And even in that short amount of time, we certainly have an online tool as well to kind of help them with the questions they should be asking their business. But doing a walkthrough assessment, we can very quickly give them some ideas of things that they could improve in that would very quickly, add to their bottom line in an immediate way. But the challenge is getting them to go a little bit deeper and to see, what they can do in a longer-term strategic rather than that quick fix. And I think that's back to one of the other challenges is that everyone's always looking for the quick fix.
Yeah.
And this is a little bit more, changing the culture and changing the way they work and behave. I think to circle back to your earlier interest, and I touched on a little bit, we often blame labor for the challenges, and it's actually not the people. I think we have very good people and very talented people. But if we have them in inefficient systems, it doesn't allow them to provide the output that they could be providing. So
absolutely.
So we're just as poor, when we're busy, we don't train our people well. And when we go into a dip in the economy, we also pull that quickly from from our budget line as well. And so I think, a key theme that I would say is investing in your people, really helping them be part of, analysis of what's working and what's not working. They know. Oftentimes we don't even ask, and yet they're in this all the time. They are often working with client and building that relationship with the client. I think there's an opportunity to give them more autonomy and authority to be able to, heard a great speaker from CEO of the Ritz-Carlton.
Oh, yeah.
They empower, even their doorman to fix any problem. They've got a limit of up to $2,000 to fix whatever. Now, I think we need to start looking at our businesses with that kind of empowerment.
Well, and it's interesting because I think a lot of businesses are terrified that if they do something like that, it's going to be abused. And yet Ritz-Carlton and others who've done that don't find that it is abused at all.
Mm-mm. And we're seeing more innovative companies. You see the firms that we would classify as more innovative.
Yeah.
They are taking much more risk in this way with their people and finding the return bigger than they had even anticipated, with the maternity or paternity leaves, vacation times, so it's engaging and empowering your people is, and I know that's an overused word.
Yeah.
But it's so true. And I think there's an opportunity to apply a number of those methodologies, of course, not all at once in a step by step, but to our industrial sectors. And I think that, there's an opportunity to totally revolutionize what we're doing, and we could be competitive in the course of that kind of approach.
Right. So you talked about starting off with a quick walkthrough. Can you tell me a little bit more about how you do that and, how quick is quick?
Okay. So, the walkthrough of their operations, and it, again, depends on the type of business, but it's a manufacturing and construction firm. It's a couple hours of walking through, asking questions, everything from, where the order starts to going out the door, asking about the people complement, the shift times, the changeovers, if they have to adjust things for different customers. We'll ask them questions about their customer base around, and we'll try to get in some questions around strategy, do the employees know kind of the goals or targets that they're trying to hit.
Yep.
All of that is kind of rolled into a hopefully an easy conversation so that it's not putting the company on the spot, but it allows to really get a bit of a feel for what's happening in the business. And then, certainly asking where their biggest pain points are. And through that discussion, we'll delve a little bit deeper into that area to find out what's going on, how long, is it frequent, infrequent, And then that will allow us to really circle back to the firm with some suggestions on what their next course of action might be.
Right. So what are the biggest barriers then that you find to actually going to that next step? So you've started off, you've shown them there is potential for some quick wins.
Mm-hmm.
Then what sorts of barriers do you typically hit?
What we've learned along the way is to make sure that the leadership management of the organization is really on board with wanting to see some change. So I should have included that in the earlier step.
Yeah.
But because then, you know, that's the only way that, you know, you're going to see some progress. But the next step is we generally do what's called a productivity 101 with all the staff. And those will be rotating so that we don't disrupt the business too much and can engage everyone. And that really goes through the components of kind of the operational piece around innovation, around leadership and management, and the whole collaboration theme. And it helps everyone get on the same page as far as definition goes, questions go, but it's also very interactive and experiential. So they have time even to think about and apply to their own work situations, things that they can immediately go back and start to try out or start to develop a plan around.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the first more in-depth conversation and engagement with the firm before we identify a key area that we would like to kind of maybe bring a bit of a SWAT team in and identify a team within their organization that could start to look at a particular process or challenge.
One thing I've heard from some organizations is that they're reluctant to go out and talk, like the CEO or whoever is reluctant to go out and talk to customers directly because their sales staff feel that that's an imposition on their role.
Mm.
Have you seen that kind of thing at all? Or?
Yes. I haven't heard it quite phrased that way, but I've heard it more probably from the owner, operator, president saying, well, that's what I have sales staff for.
Okay.
I think some things that we've encouraged is that they tag team, is that a owner and a sales manager to go out on some sales calls together so that they can hear things together.
Mm-hmm.
Because that gives just a better perspective of what they're hearing from the customer. But I would agree that there is a disconnect between that kind of a collaborative approach to working with the customer.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, as you know, the CEO, president, owner-operator role doesn't get involved until there's a problem and it's escalated. And, you know, I think there's an opportunity to be able to work together far before that happens.
That is an excellent point. So having some proactive visits with customers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I would assume that the way a lot of salespeople are compensated, they're not compensated as much for maintaining the ongoing relationship as they are for bringing in new business. So that sets up a conflict of interest for them.
Right. And so that's a whole area of discussion, too, that we're finding is what are you really measuring and what are you rewarding?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go to a straight commission, then it is not recognizing the number of leads and, you know, the follow-up and nurturing of the relationship. Then they are strictly focused on the next order.
Yeah.
So I think we need to look, you know, more carefully about, you know, a range of metrics that would really encourage a more well-rounded relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's often why in larger organizations, too, that marketing and sales, which you'd think should have the same goals, often don't. They conflict because of the different orientation of the stage in the process. Do you find that a lot of the organizations you work with are still not really taking the whole digital challenge very seriously? Are they recognizing that a website can be more than just a brochure?
Oh, no. At least the industrial sectors are very poor in utilizing digital media.
Mm-hmm.
They're also poor in actually even using existing technologies within their operations more effectively.
Really?
Yeah, and I think it's a number of factors. I think they're not well-versed. You know, they are more in the manufacture of particular product or widget, but not as well-versed in various technologies that aid in the communication, the processes. And often they get, you know, go to a trade show or other types of events and kind of get sold a robust system that's probably way beyond what their business needs. And so you only need to do that once. And, you know, and they kind of square off investing in technology.
Right, because they feel they've been burned.
Right. So, you know, and there's often a push, you know, for this industry to automate, right? And we would suggest that it's more important to kind of go through and understand your processes first.
Absolutely.
And then look for the opportunities to be able to look for, you know, either existing or to develop together new technologies that are going to advance the business rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, for us has been a real, just a real big area of learning for us, because it's not something that we had anticipated. And so we've even kind of broken down a program that does just that, that just helps them walk through their processes and look for where technologies could be of value, even a system with what that RFP might look like, or not get into the vendor selection, but what would the process be so that they're making a more informed decision and choice to integrate technologies into the business. So I think there's a huge opportunity there, but as you've identified, it's a huge gap.
Yeah. One thing that happens a lot in big companies is, even if the senior folks say, okay, we want to do something about improving customer service or customer experience, a lot of the employees have become jaded. They think, oh, yeah, flavor of the month. Do you see that at all in smaller organizations?
Yes.
Okay.
Just as much, yeah. And I think that comes from, you know, the circle back to looking for that Band-Aid approach.
Yeah.
I think a lot of our owner operators of our businesses tend to look for that magic bullet.
Mm-hmm.
And so the employees get, you know, often will roll their eyes to say, oh no, what have they come up with next? So, you know, one of the things that we suggest a lot is pulling a brain trust team together to kind of work together on first breaking down the problem so that you know for sure what you're trying to address, and then looking for solutions together and engaging the rest of the team, your employees, right from the beginning. So you're not kind of putting upon, but you're working through solutions together. And then the uptake of that is just natural. It's not, you don't really need a sell job. Everyone's engaged. You see ownership of that solution. And even if the solution isn't perfect, there's more opportunity to look for other opportunities or adjust as you go, just by engaging your people in that way.
Right. And so on that kind of team, you want to make sure you've got people from all levels and departments as well.
Absolutely.
Right.
And that was something that, you know, we didn't mention earlier on that sales focus. You know, if you're straight out there making sales and you don't often understand what, you know, sometimes you can overpromise and underdeliver.
Yeah.
So just to, you know, put a fine point on that, on the earlier comment about what we're rewarding, when you put those teams together, then there's a greater understanding of how quickly you would need to gear up to be able to provide, you know, a new product, a new service, or, you know, adjust the existing one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Lori, is there anything that you wish I had asked you and I haven't?
I think the main theme of all this work is that we, as leaders of these organizations, I think we need to learn to receive feedback better.
Yeah.
So both within our organizations and, as we started off the conversation, from our customers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that we're allow ourselves to be vulnerable enough to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think the greatest breakthrough in all this work has come.
That's a really interesting point. I was just writing the other day about how, when I started working as a freelance writer many years ago, I would get really irritated when an editor would come back with suggestions, but I'd force myself to just sleep on it, because invariably, if I went and looked at it a few hours later, I realized their suggestions really did improve it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it can be, yeah, it is a learning process, I guess, to learn to accept feedback. And I would imagine particularly a lot of owners who are founders of their company have a tendency to think, oh, I know best because I'm the one who created this and built it.
That or they evoked history, right? Because
yes.
You know, a lot of times we say, well, you know what, we've been there, done that. And, you know, we've tried those approaches before. And so we tend to get more narrow in looking at things in a fresh, new way. And I think when we're passionate about what we do, mm-hmm. we find it very difficult to be able to take that kind of, we take that kind of feedback as criticism, and we take it personally.
Yeah,
I think if we were able to be more open and less sensitive to getting good feedback, I think that would take us a long way in both, you know, internally how we move the business forward, but also in how we meet, feed our customers' expectations and really strive for excellence.
That is an excellent point. I think that's also a good note to end this conversation on. Lori, thank you so much for your time. You did mention earlier in the interview that you had some kind of tool online as well.
We do.
And where would people find that?
Under www.goproductivity.ca, and they will look for the productivity assessment tool, or the PAT.
Okay, that sounds awesome. I will also link to that in the show notes. Thank you so much for your time, Lori.
Thank you, my pleasure. Bye.
You know, it sounds so obvious, and yet it's still true that many CEOs are reluctant to make the time to chat with their customers, especially the customers that they've had for a while. It's easy to start taking them for granted. I think that in this interview, Lori really made the point quite effectively that you need to talk to them on a regular basis. And in fact, it's great if you can really literally invite them in and get them to help you in co-creating your next products or your process improvements. Another really interesting point that she raised is that as leaders, we need to get better at accepting feedback. That's it for today's podcast. As always, I truly value your feedback. And in fact, I don't go there very often, but every now and then I do pop over to iTunes to check and see if anyone's been leaving reviews. So I'd like to just read a couple of them for you. Here's one from Dave McQueen. It's titled, "I'm glad I found this great podcast." And he writes, "This is a podcast that entrepreneurs as well as consumers would do well to subscribe to. It is one of the most engaging and informative podcasts I've heard. It is at once inviting and relatable." Thank you so much, Dave. I really appreciate that. There's another one from Gadget Greg, who writes the title, "Good Conversation and Relevant Information. Frank Reactions has a wide selection of topics and guests with relevant information for both businesses and consumers. The host asks well thought out questions that keep the conversation going, which truly enhances the experience." 999 Ladybug 999 writes, "Frankly, great. I've been interested in following Temma's work and social media posts for years. Frank Reactions and Frank Ideas are great sources of inspiration and information." And finally, Donna Crooks, who I interviewed in episode 25, which you can find at frankreactions.com/25, writes, "Smart and insightful. Temma Frank is a thoughtful and intelligent interviewer who engages in lively discussion with her guests. She has a talent for picking out key themes relevant to her customer experience focused audience. It was a pleasure to meet with her in Toronto this year. Highly recommended." So thank you again, everybody who has left reviews on iTunes. I totally appreciate it. You have no idea what it feels like sitting here in a lonely room, broadcasting to people who you don't get to see and rarely get to hear from. So it means so much to me when you write a review. So if you could take some time to pop on over to iTunes or Stitcher and leave a review, I would be incredibly grateful. Also, if you'd like to give me some direct feedback, you can always reach me at TEM as in marketing A at frankreactions.com or by telephone toll free 1-866-544-9262, on Twitter simply at Temma Frank, and on LinkedIn or elsewhere. That's it for today. Chat with you again in a week. Bye.